thank you so much. I am so blessed, and so are you. I feel so blessed to be here with you all today. I love being in spiritual community. I love unity, but you didn't think there was going to be a but to that, did you? Not this early in the message anyway. But when I first found unity, and several years after I first found unity, whenever anybody would ask me, what is this thing you're going on and on about called unity, I couldn't figure out really how to define it except by saying what it wasn't. I would say, well, okay, so we don't do original sin. We don't believe that human beings are inherently flawed. We don't believe that heaven and hell are geographical destinations that we're going to go to at the end of our lives. We don't believe that God is some old man that sits in the sky and makes rules up about us, right? And decides to bless some people, decides to not bless other people. And we don't think that we all have the rightest answers in the world. Now, some of us might think that. But as a theology, we do not teach that we have the only one and true path to God. So that's a good thing sometimes to really know what we don't want, what we don't resonate with. That's part of it. And we can see this in our unity denials and affirmations, right? First of all, we deny what no longer serves us. We deny that any of that has any power over us. But if we were to leave it there, it would be somewhat incomplete. Because think about this. Say if you said, hey, Stacy, I'm back in the dating scene. I need you to fix me up with someone. And I said, got it. I got the perfect person for you. You're going to love this person. They are not stingy. Okay, and I was saying, what else about them? They are not rude. And when they walk into a room, they don't like suck all the energy out or anything. Yeah, they're a pretty good person. You'd probably be saying, okay, yeah, I went to the wrong place. Let me get an app or something. So this is not the place to go for a date. But if I were to say to you instead, hey, I've got somebody for you. They are generous and open-hearted. They are kind and compassionate. And when they walk into a room, they light the whole place up because they bring such an open-hearted presence and a joy of being. Now, some of y'all might be interested. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands because I don't want any awkward car rides home for you married people. But that's something we can kind of lean into a little bit more when we say, what are we for? What do we want to see more of? So as I was kind of grappling with some of these conversations and telling some family members that I thought were going to be really excited about this cool place I found that didn't believe in hell, but they weren't as excited as I was, let me tell you that. And one of them asked me one day, well, Stacy, if y'all are saying there's no hell and there's no such thing as original sin, do you even need God's grace? Is there a place for grace in that theology? So I didn't react. I didn't want to respond too quickly. I went within, summoned the most articulate answer I could come up with, and said, But along the years, I found that there's really indeed a place for grace in our unity teachings, especially when it comes to healing. Because we teach about there's one presence, one power in the world. It's God, it's good. There's no opposing power to that, right? And that we are expressions of that, and so we must be good too. And then we also teach that our thoughts have creative power. Now, I have a minister friend who says that, well, that's the grace right there, is that not all of our thoughts are created, right? We don't see all of our thoughts populated into things, or we'd all be in big trouble. But I think there's something even deeper here in an experience of grace in the unity teachings. And it comes from even the definition of unity is it's the opposite of being divided. Unity is the opposite of being divided. It is oneness. And in the daily word that was read a little bit ago, there was a line in there that says, I cannot limit God. I cannot limit God. I cannot limit the allness, the infiniteness, the eternal, the intelligence of the universe, spirit, whatever name you have for it. We cannot limit it. But that doesn't stop us from trying to. And we try to in several ways. One of the ways that we try to limit God It's by putting a lot of conditions on our lives. And so one of the things that we do is kind of look to the past. Sometimes we are hampered by something that happened in our past. We may have been the victim of something. We may have been the perpetrator of something. But there's some kind of story we're telling ourselves about our past that we want to put a limit. So that's why I can't have this now. Because I'm still feeling this. Because I'm still in this situation. Sometimes it's only revealed to us. Sometimes some of that stuff's subconscious. We find out that we get really mad about a particular thing and we look, why does that upset us? It's because this is who I'm believing I am because of something that happened in my past. So then another way that we can limit, try to put limits on God, is by thinking something's great going to happen in the future. So this what's going on right here. I kind of like it, but it could be a little bit better. And it'll probably be better when I get this certificate, get this promotion, get this relationship, get out of this relationship. There are conditions in the world that if they are arranged in a different way, sometime in the future, then I can be healed. I can have a full expression of my life. So that's a couple ways we try. And then a third way that we try is our relationship to fear. We all have fear. We all have fear, and it's something that sometimes it stands in between something and something we want to do, that we would love to do. But there's either a chasm or a creek or something we can't quite cross to get what we want to do, and that chasm is fear. And instead of letting it just inform us, hey, we're stepping into unknown territory here, and observing it, we become consumed by it. So when we're living in any of these ways, and you might have, you all are so good, you probably have other ways that you try to limit God. I'm sure you're very talented in it. Those are just some of them. Those are just some of them. And when we are in this expression, we are not experiencing the fullness of life. We are convinced that life is just about the conditions that we're in. And I love the Sufi poet Hafiz. He's a little rascal. And he says this. He says, imagine that we're all fish riding camels. You're a fish riding a camel. I'm a fish riding a camel. And he said, the first thing is that the fish has to say, something ain't right about this camel riding. Damn, I'm so thirsty. So this is us when we are living in this world of condition and thinking that this is all there is to life. When we have closed ourselves off to grace, I would even say. Because what we're thinking is that we live in some kind of transactional only situation. Get this many points and this will happen. Right? And this can be even a slippery slope for us in unity too. Although we don't take on this idea of original sin, we sure can get slippery with, this happened in your life? What were you thinking about? I've seen it happen. So because I feel like we're friends now, I've been here 4 or 5 times. And I feel like you all will still like me anyway. I'm going to tell you a really embarrassing story about myself and a time that I was riding that camel, honey. I was on it. So we had a writer's workshop at Unity of Houston, where I'm from, and I was so excited to be able to attend it. It was a 3-day workshop, and basically the premise was you went into the sanctuary. There was a cricket soundtrack for some reason. I'm not sure what that was about, but it was lovely. Didn't talk. It was in the silence. It was beautiful. First 2 days, bliss. I just felt really free to express myself. Well, because nobody's reading what I wrote, but you know. But then on the 3rd day, something happened. The facilitator got up and he said, okay, so to close this whole thing out, I'm going to pass the microphone around the room and you're going to share. Everybody's going to get a chance to share what they've been writing about and what their experience has been like. Well, this was a problem for me, because at the time, I had a deathly, deathly fear of public speaking. And I don't mean public speaking like this many people in the room. I mean where 2 or more are gathered. I could barely say my name. I would get so nervous, even if it was just, say your name and why you're taking this class. I was like, name, 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 I know it. It's in here somewhere. I was deathly afraid. And it was judgments about looking stupid, sounding stupid, approval, all the kinds of stuff that go on in here, right? And so this microphone's getting passed around. I see it getting a little closer. It's now coming to my table. And what did I do in that moment? Oh, gee, look at my phone. I think it just made a noise. Oh, sorry, folks, I gotta go. I gotta see a man about a horse. I gotta talk to him. I faked a phone call to get out of sharing at church. This is my confession to you. And they still let me become a minister. You can write to UWSI and tell them, you know, you think that should be revoked. I don't know. But it wasn't my highest moment. But in that moment, I didn't know how else to react. I was paralyzed with fear. And I couldn't do it. And so later on, when I began to get the pull and the call to go to ministerial school and start taking classes. Someday, you know, I'm pretty smart. It doesn't take me long to catch on. I thought, I don't think I'm going to be able to fake a phone call every time I'm asked to pray for somebody or speak or something. I'm probably going to need a few other tricks or something. But I didn't quite know how to heal that fear. Maybe you have some limiting idea about yourself or some limitation that you know isn't right. Maybe it's you think it's standing in between you and something that you really want to do, but you're not sure how to go about. How do I heal this? Well, the good news is you don't have to know. You don't have to know. The only thing you have to do is to be willing to know that that is not the truth of who you are, and that you, God has not placed that limitation upon you. The divine hasn't placed that limitation upon you. That's you with the limitation. God doesn't know it. And so one day in my first semester of ministerial school, I was reading The Essential Charles Fillmore book. A pretty good book. No, I had to read it. No, it was good. It was very good. I opened up to a page, and it had two lines on it. And it said, I am alive with the life of Christ. I am intelligent with the intelligence of Christ. I am alive with the life of life itself. I am intelligent with the intelligence of the universe itself. There is no separation between your life and God's life. There is no separation from your intelligence and God's intelligence or creativity or compassion or whatever it is that you want to express in this world. There is no separation. Right? So we know this, we teach this, but until we are willing to accept it and accept it from the point of view that there is nothing we need to do to earn it. And that's why the word grace can sometimes be problematic, because in some understandings, and indeed the definition, is that it's unmerited favor. So one interpretation of that is, well, you don't deserve this thing, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Well, that's not exactly an expansive way to live, is it? But another idea of grace is that it's unmerited, meaning you don't have to do anything to earn it. You don't have to do anything to deserve it. It is just here by nature of your divine birthright. And you do have to do something. Not something to earn it, but you have to be willing to accept that it's true. And this is where all healing happens, is on the level of consciousness. It's not about trying to fix things in the outer world. And yes, there are times that we want things to change, that we know they need to change. But first, we got to get right in here and know our own wholeness. That's where it all begins. So Richard Rohr says that any kind, he talks about freedom. And let's be clear, anytime we want to heal something, change something, we're not feeling free in some way. We're feeling constrained by something. We're feeling limited, like some limitations have been placed upon us. So when we want to experience freedom, there's a primal freedom. And the primal freedom, Richard Rohr says, is to be able to be the self and to be able to live in the truth of the self despite all outer conditions. So I think that's a freedom we can all lean into, right? That's a freedom we'd all like to be able to live in. And guess what? It's available to us. It's available to us. Eckhart Tolle talks about the idea that this is our natural state of being. The sun is shining, and then some days it's overcast. But do the clouds deny the truth of the sun? Can they limit the sun in any way? Maybe temporarily, but the sun is still the sun. It's still shining on and on and on. So there's nothing that we can do, no limits that we can place to inhibit that. So, you know, we try. Like I said, we try. So that's the call for all of us, I think, is to learn to see where is it that we've got this overcast kind of weather system in our own minds. Where are we blocking our own good? And sometimes that manifestation doesn't happen right away. We want to jump right towards manifestation. Okay, this is like this. I need it to be different tomorrow. Let me do 10 affirmations, meditate. Okay, it should be all good. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes something takes a really long time. And Eric Butterworth talks about in his book, Spiritual Economics, I love what he says about the demonstration. He said, get your mind off the demonstration. He said, quit trying to act like you're trying to coax a magic show out of a reticent God. Right? Just stand on one leg and do this. Maybe, you know, something will happen. That's not the way it works. He said, get your mind off the demonstration itself and center your awareness on a deeper sense of what it means to be alive. What it means to be able to just stand here and breathe. What have you done to earn this breath? Nothing. What about the last one? Did you have to do something for that one? What about the next one? What about your heartbeat? Oh, did you write a check, send it in? Oh, gosh, I just aged myself a little bit. Write a check. What's a check? No. Right? This is all freely given. And I love how the gospel writers in the Bible, they talked about Jesus as healing a lot. And never once in the healing stories did Jesus ask to see somebody's report card or driver's record. Or say, give me the phone number of your ex-girlfriend or boyfriend. I want to see what kind of partner you were. I need your last employer, anything like that. There was never any indication that what his healing ministry for was for the people that had behaved the best. And in fact, sometimes it was the exact opposite. The only thing he ever asked, sometimes he didn't ask anything. Somebody just to come up and touch his robe, they were healed. The only thing he ever asked was, would you be healed? Do you believe? And so we can look at this metaphysically to say, would we realize our wholeness? Would we, despite whatever circumstances in our life, not be tricked into thinking that that's a limitation on God's part, that instead, whatever circumstances are here for us, even if they don't look like it, even if they feel bad, there's something here for us. I know for me, a lot of times when I've suffered the most, it took me straight to a path of, well, maybe not straight. Okay, I would stay suffering for a little while. But eventually, I would end up in here at a deeper realization of who I've come here to be. So as you go on on your week and your days and your moments of feeling abundant sometimes, feeling insufficient sometimes, feeling like you can be generous sometimes, feeling like you need to be closed off sometimes. Just invite you to notice this. Notice what the actual, when you're being the truth of who you are, there's a sense of generosity. Eric Butterworth, he goes on to say on this demonstration about getting your mind off the demonstration, he said, don't try to make the demonstration, let the demonstration make you. So how does a demonstration make you? When you're in those moments of stillness, when you take time away from the just incessant noise of the world, you become really clear that you are an expression of the infinite source of the allness of mind. That this is who you have come here to be. And so how could any of this nickel and dime stuff take away any of that from you? It simply can't. The only thing that you can do in those moments, there are things that you're not going to be able to control out here, is to not let them control you, right? So I would like to go ahead and close this time with a little, one more Hafiz, and a little meditation. On this from Hafiz, he asks, where is the door to God? Where is the door to God? Where is the door to the infinite, to the allness, to supply? Where is it? And he says, it's in the bark of a dog. It's in the ringing of a hammer. It's in the drop of rain. And it's in the face of everyone I see. And so what I know and affirm for each person here today is that the allness, the wholeness, the perfection of the universe is seeking to express itself uniquely as you. That there is nothing that your heart desires, no healing in any certain area of your life, no sense of expansion, nothing that is off limits to you when you accept the grace of the fullness of the divine. And so in this moment, I invite you just to breathe. Search your heart. Is there somewhere that you're feeling a little constricted? Any place where you feel that your freedom in that area is being withheld from you, or any place you'd like to experience some more peace or joy? Simply ask yourself the question, am I willing to receive it? Am I willing to accept that there's nothing I need to do to be made more ready for it? This is not a future act, but I can have this right here, right now, this sense of freedom, this sense of fulfillment. Sense of wholeness. And so with gratitude for this holy moment, for the sacred opportunity to come home to the truth of who we are, to affirm the grace of God in all that is ours to do, we are grateful, and so it is. Amen.